Moncrief on News Talk.
I worked my butt off, but PETA never came out to see the improvements, never came out to see the quality of life with these chimps, because they don't really give a shit about the chimps. All they want is their agenda furthered, which is to have no animals in people's care. Come. PETA has no empathy for the person that owns the animals or the love that they have for those animals.
And that's what people just really can't understand.
I fell in love with those kids.
Ready. Come on.
It's just like every day you wake up into a new world.
What, Danny Day? What, baby girl?
They don't break your heart. They're eager to please.
Can you hand me them papers? Give me those papers. Shove them sucker down there for me. Thank you, boy.
They'll be your friend for life.
That's Chimp Crazy. You can stream all episodes now on Sky Documentaries and Now TV. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon, Sean.
Is this just basically Tiger King with monkeys?
Yes and no, right? So it does come from Eric Good, who is the creator of Tiger King. And, you know, he's a film, you know, documentarian filmmaker who had this big, huge pandemic-based hit about, obviously, animal cruelty and a number of very eccentric characters in that world, and has found his milieu and what he likes to work in, and this time turns his attention towards chimps instead. But what's sort of very interesting about this documentary is it's almost two for the price of one, right? So you have a documentary about these chimp moms, and that is personified by Tanya Haddocks, who we heard in the clip there, who is a character, shall we say, who is absolutely in love with chimps and chimpanzees, and to the point where she is in huge legal battles with PETA about keeping ownership of various chimpanzees in the US, where there are very poor and lax laws about wild animals. And into that fray comes Eric Good, the creator of Tiger King. And you could imagine that if you had made a documentary that ultimately saw Joe Exotic ending up in prison,
yeah,
that the participants of other like-minded documentaries would perhaps run a mile away from you if you were going to point a camera at them. So it becomes as much about the ethics in journalism, to steal a line from Gamergate, because he hires someone to play a proxy director, as in a con man, to basically fool these women into talking to him about their love of chimpanzees, right? So on the whole, you have that kind of aspect to it. You have the legal battle between Tanya and mainly her main antagonist is PETA's lawyer, Jared Goodman. And you can tell that there is no love lost between this pair. They are both just absolutely hate each other. And also you get a lot from Alan Cumming, who the Scottish actor, who 30 years ago was in a movie called Buddy with Rene Russo, in which a young chimp named Tonka was a co-star of his. And he had such affection for Tonka that all these years later, he's really interested in his welfare. And would you believe it, he is in Tanya's care. And this kicks off a legal battle to release Tonka into an animal sanctuary. Now, if all that sounds like a lot, I will say the great thing is there's only four episodes here. They're roughly about an hour each. And I savored every single one of them, because in addition to the weird Americana of it all, and I mean, you know, there is some Joe Exotic-ism of American pet ownership going on here, there's also just a dark undercurrent to this, because they talk about multiple cases of people owning chimps who are animals, wild animals, obviously, who live in their home until they go wild and express their distaste for their lot in the most violent, brutal ways. And it's not that we see any of this, but we do see the aftermath of it. And there are times when this is absolutely shocking and riveting television because of that.
Now, Tanya Haddocks, is it like an animal sanctuary she's running, or does she think she's their mother?
I think no one can deny that she loves the chimps, right? She absolutely adores the chimps that are in her care, but whether or not she's treating them to the best condition that they should be in is highly debatable, if not very obviously not, in the sense that she's feeding her chimps McDonald's. She's they are trapped in cages and enclosures that seem much smaller. Like, I'm talking about things that we would have thought in zoos were inappropriate 40 years ago, let alone in, you know, contemporary US. Now, she, all a lot of these animal advocates, I won't say that, a lot of these animal lovers, these chimp moms, they, as well as loving their own chimps, they are also heavily involved in the brokerage of chimps. So they are selling young chimpanzees to other people who are into this kind of industry. So there's a lot of money to be had in the trade of chimps and exotic animals, primates, monkeys, etc. So that's where a lot of their back money is coming from. And that money does not, I would say, from the evidence I see in this documentary, go into beautiful habitats for them. They are instead in, like, I mean, the most terribly pastel-coloured prisons you could imagine a great ape ending up in.
Oh, God. And is the documentary upfront about the fact that they used a fake director to win this woman's confidence?
It is not, right? So that's another kind of aspect of it. Ah. So you have at one point this fake director who's played by Dwayne Cunningham, who himself is a wild animal specialist who had been in jail at some point for his own activities involving wild animals. You have him feeling very torn about his role in all of this, because as we get further into the case, and I can't really give away any details because they would amount to spoilers, but there are so many twists and turns in this that it makes for utterly compelling television. What I will say is, if you're worried about animal cruelty in this, there is no doubt that there are animals subjected to various bouts of cruelty throughout the show. You do not see any of it directly, but most of it ends happily. And the good news from the show is that it's been such a hit in the US that various primate sanctuaries have seen like a 200% increase in their funding, public funding, since then. So some good has come of this. And for the bad that has come, it is at least very, very entertaining television.
Yeah. Our next show is Nobody Wants This. You can stream all episodes of season one now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
You're a real life rabbi?
It's hot, right?
I mean, sort of. I tell my sister every time a guy is cheating on her.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta tell your sister.
Right?
Yeah. Are you guys close?
Yeah, she's my best friend and my worst enemy.
I have one of those.
I think I'm gonna go.
Ooh, feels a bit anti-Semitic.
No, you are, you're in like a romantic gray area, and I'm trying to make healthy relationship choices. I'm one day in.
Okay, one. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know what? Let me walk you out.
My God, you're obsessed with me.
I was gonna leap anyway.
Were you?
Eventually.
So it's, you know, the original odd couple, how could they ever get together type scenario.
Yeah, so basically, this time he's Jewish. Right? And that's never the twain shall meet, basically, between those two things, right? So this is very loosely inspired by a true story. So the creator of this is Aaron Foster, who is a comic writer in her own right. She wrote on The New Normal, which was a Ryan Murphy sitcom about 10 years ago. She's also the daughter of David Foster, late of Yolanda in Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, amongst many other wives. And she comes from great privilege. And in a few years ago, she met a guy in the gym, a reformed Jewish guy, and a year later was engaged to him after converting to Judaism. And here she creates a somewhat similar story. So we have Kristen Bell. She plays Joanne, who is a podcaster. She does a podcast with her sister, Justine Loop, who you will recognize from Succession, where she was, I want to say Flicka, if that was her name, but I could be wrong about that. She was Connor's bit on the side, shall we say. And they have the most bizarre but highly successful podcast, even though the people
Oh my God. I like, because I've seen episodes of this that like you see them and they're talking, but they're not, and they're waving the microphone around like they don't know you have to talk into the microphone. They don't know how to set the equipment up. They're recording it in what seems to be a completely glass-filled room, which is the worst acoustics you could. Oh my, that part was really annoying.
And at one point they say that a comment on their podcast was they were annoyed by how many toilet breaks they were taking. Yes. They don't even know the most basic editing skills. But anyway, right?
Yeah.
So they have this racy podcast where they talk about their sex lives. And they are single 30-something women. And at a dinner party, Joanne meets Noah. He is a very recently single Jewish rabbi, but the twist, he is hot, right? And he's played by Adam Brody, late of The OC. And they have a meet cute and then a will they, won't they? And it very quickly becomes a they will, but will they go the distance, I guess, is the greater issue. Because he's a rabbi, he's a man of great Jewish faith, although... To be honest, in the show, his Judaism seems to be very a la carte because he kind of is, and like he's very free living. He's doing whatever he wants. I guess I don't know enough about Judaism to say whether a contemporary rabbi living in LA can or cannot do. But it seems like the road to their happiness is not filled with great dangers for them, except that she's agnostic and really is no interest in religion at all. Now, when I was listening to a bit of criticism about this by various religious people, they were saying the biggest with it is actually in the show he asks her to convert to Judaism, and actually that's completely not how it's supposed to work. If someone is interested in doing so, they have to ask at least three times and will be rejected by a rabbi three times before they can even begin the process. And although I found this charming and fun, I also just found it frustrating in other ways. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Kristen Bell. I could watch her in anything. I've watched her since Veronica Mars, and I will follow her career because I think she's got it. She's got some sort of charm. I like Adam Brody. I never watched The OC, but I like him. I think they're a good pair. They've got good chemistry. But it was everything else in the show that I didn't really care for. Like, I thought the kind of exploration of Judaism was very, very sort of shallow. And like, I just thought it was completely unrealistic that Joanne, a 30-something woman living in LA, would not have heard of even some of the most basic things in Judaism, like turning up to her to meet her potential in-laws with like a plate of cured meats. Yes. I won't be surprised if in season two she goes, what's Israel, to be honest?
Yeah.
Right, because her understanding of contemporary Jewishness is just so meaningless. But was it simple and fun and 25 minutes an episode? Yes. And did it sort of tick along, and did they have cute romantic chemistry? Yes. Was it great? Absolutely not. But like, if you're looking for a lesser romantic comedy than Colin from Accounts, well, here you go.
Yeah, and there'll definitely be a second series.
It's a huge hit, so definitely.
yeah, absolutely. The show number three is Where's Wanda? New episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV+. Here's a clip.
Someone put Wanda's t-shirt into a clothes donation bin here. Why would they pick this particular bin unless they were still near here, right? Statistics suggest that the odds of finding Wanda alive drop after the first 100 days. What day is today?
70.
So your mom and I have decided that for the next 30 days, we will do everything in our power to find her.
We think Wanda is being held in one of these houses. So we're searching all of them.
You're planning to break into all these houses?
We already did two, so then it's only another...
Just like another 60?
60.
Another 60? Look at yourselves! And that's after two houses! Try another 60 and you'll end up in prison, a mental hospital, or a cemetery.
Ola, we really don't know what else we can do here.
Okay, so we should point out that if you're going to watch it, it's probably going to be with subtitles.
Yeah, so this is Apple's first German production. It's made, it stars probably, quite a big German actress. Her name is Heike Makatsch, who wouldn't be too well known to English-speaking audiences, except that she is the secretary who gets the necklace in Love Actually when Emma Thompson only gets the Joni Mitchell album. And she plays Carlotta to Axel Stein's Dado. They are the parents of Wanda, who has gone missing in the show. She's believed by her parents abducted by someone in the neighborhood, and as the 100th day of her disappearance is fast approaching, they decide the only way to get around this is to begin bugging and spying on all their neighbors, because they're convinced that someone in the neighborhood has taken Wanda. Now, when I say that and then say it's a comedy, it would seem tonally odd, and that would be my description of the show. I was watching this going, it's like an episode of like Law and Order or Midsommar Murders taking place in the world of sex education, because it is like a hyper stylized retro 70s, 90s, 2000s vibe where everyone is like styled absolutely perfectly. The houses are all mid-century modern and cool looking and funny. But at the same time, I'm kind of going, wait, your daughter is missing. Yeah. Your 17-year-old daughter has been missing in the show for 70 days, and they're worried. The reason why they kickstart their kind of surveillance is that they're on a new show where they go, well, at the 100th day, the chance of finding her is 10%. How do you feel about that? And it's sort of like, that's pretty harrowing, right? So they're, you know, all in, I found it just, so, like, put it this way. Any humor would find it very difficult to balance these kind of narratives of great despair with slapstick humor. And German humor is perhaps not especially known for its nuanced like witticisms, and therefore doesn't pull it off. But at the same time, it's actually not written by a German. It's written by a man named Oliver Lansley. He wrote, best known for writing Flack, which was a two-season show, I think, on the BBC with Anna Paquin as a PR guru. His other credits I wasn't too familiar with. So all in, it's not that German, right? Like, as in, there is nothing particularly greatly Germanic about it. It just could take place in any place in the world with the same kind of slapstick humor. It's not terrible by any means, but it's also just part of this wave of fine TV, which is just fine. Do you know what I mean?
How like old is this daughter?
Say that again.
Sorry. How old is the daughter that's missing?
Wanda is 17 when she goes missing on this kind of like festival night, where there's also the potential of supernatural bent into it as well, because it's the night where this kind of grisly monster comes and takes a virgin from the town. And all we know is her red cape was found in the middle of the forest. So there's definitely allusions to kind of Little Red Riding Hood in there as well. It's all carried along by a voiceover from Wanda giving these like pithy, modern, postmodern takes on everything that's happening in the show. The performances are kind of cute and funny, but like, this is not the thing that's going to get you to sign up for Apple TV. It is something relatively diverting and very, very stylish to watch while you're waiting for something better to come along. But all in, it's just fine.
Yeah. Those three shows are Chimp Crazy. You can stream all episodes now on Sky Documentaries and Now TV. Nobody Wants Us. You can stream all of season one now on Netflix. And Where's Wanda? New episodes every Wednesday on Apple TV+. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.